Who are you actively choosing that time and time again makes your life a better story? And I think that's an important message to remember, to always be learning, always stay in rookie mode. And over time, we continue to be the best for the world because others were the best for us.
Hello and welcome to Conversations with Keith and Deming, the podcast where we explore how do we become better people in business and better business people. Today, I have a very exciting guest. His name is Clint Pulver, and he's the author of this book, I Love It Here. He's a speaker, he's a trainer, he's an educator, and what he does and what we share in this conversation are some of the ways you get highly engaged employees and people who are fighting for your cause or enjoy working for the company that you have started or you belong to. If you enjoy this podcast, feel free to subscribe wherever you get podcasts. Check out my newsletter at keithademing.com, or you can support my work by checking out my new book, Strategy to Action. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation because there are lots of great sound bites in it. So Clint, for people who have no idea who you are and what you do, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a professional keynote speaker, an Emmy Award winner, a researcher, and a best-selling author of the book called I Love It Here, and spend my time going around undercover doing research in organizations and helping leaders to understand how to create a better organization that people never want to leave.
I love that premise of people never want to leave. Tell us a little bit about how you landed on this work. You talk a little bit about it in your book, but how did you land up on being a researcher who talks about, helps companies build places and spaces where people never want to leave?
Yeah, so it's been about 7 years ago. I was a part of a mastermind group, and we were in New York City, and we were meeting with other CEOs and business professionals, and we were talking about their business and what worked and what didn't. And this one specific business owner talked about how he was just crushing it in the space of adaptation and being able to move throughout a market that's always constantly ever changing, right? You got to adapt to the market in order to succeed. And I agreed with them. And then I said, so what about the people factor? What about how you manage employees? Do you feel like you've had to change how you manage employees today versus what you did 20 years ago? And he fired back and he said, nah, there's no need to change there. What I did 20 years ago is exactly what I do today, and I get results. And it was kind of a bold and very contrasting statement, because here he felt the need to constantly change the business strategy to an evolving marketplace, but no need to change how he worked with people. And the world changes, right? And as we grow up in that world, people change. People see and view things differently. The values and the needs of what employees are looking for today can differ than what they were looking for 20 years ago. And so I thanked him for his time. We had 45 minutes to kill until I needed to be to the next place. So I just, out of curiosity, being in his store, I looked around and all of his employees were my age or younger. So I'm a millennial, and I just, out of curiosity, walked up to them and I said, hey, I'm just curious, what's it like to work here? And the employees kind of got quiet. They looked around. It felt like an illegal drug exchange. And then they told me everything, the good, the bad, what they loved, what they didn't love. And at the end of the six conversations that I had, five out of the six of his employees said they would not be working for him and his store in less than 3.5 months. That was a massive light bulb moment, because I think the perception of leadership versus the reality of the employee experience is usually a night and day difference, because there's no incentive for an employee, especially when things are not going well, to look at the manager and say, hey, listen, here's five things you need to be doing better if you want to retain me. We don't have those conversations. So yeah. It leaves leaders in a hard spot, not really knowing if what they're doing is actually effective or not, or all they see is the constant drip of turnover in the organization. And, they're scratching their head saying, I don't understand why. And so that was the day I started the Undercover Millennial Program. And we have now researched over 280 organizations, and I've interviewed over 11,000 employees undercover. And that's what led to me writing the book, I Love It Here. And
I have a question for you on that. You said, I don't know if you said in your book or you said in an interview when I was preparing for this, you said you would never write another book. Is that still true?
That is still true. I would never do it again. Yeah. The hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Never do it again. Yeah. Never.
Okay. So the premise of this podcast is, how do we help people be better people in business and better business people? How does your work connect to the first half of that? How do you help people be better people in business?
I think it's reminding people of the stewardship and the opportunity that they have to write a great story in the lives of those they employ, those they work alongside with. I don't know, the things you say, the things you do, how you do it, and the way you say it, it matters. It matters. And I think those efforts, those moments that we choose to create in the lives of other people throughout our business, over time, those little moments add up to be a lot. And I think at the end of our lives, or even just currently, right, you don't really remember days in business. You remember moments in business. And so I think the more we can create those moments, the better the story of and the hardness and the challenge of business becomes more enjoyable and purpose-filled. And I love
that. One of the things I love about your work is really about employee retention, but you never talk about, I've never heard you say that, like not once, like in the videos I've watched and reading your book, you're not talking about employee retention that way, but that's what you're doing. I want to double click on a couple of things you just said there. So in your interviews, have you ever heard of people talk about a distinction between it matters and you matter, mm-hmm. or your work matters? So the three. It matters, you matter, and your work matters.
Yeah.
What are some of the insights from your research on that?
Yeah, I think when people lead with more so you matter, the rest of that equation takes care of itself. Because here's the thing I learned in the research very quickly is that every employee is asking the question of their business owner, of their manager, their CEO. They're asking the question, let me know when you get to the part about me. Let me know when I matter. Let me know when this business gets to the part about me growing and me earning more money and the part of me feeling more fulfilled. And I think as business owners, sometimes it's hard to hear that because we think, you know, well, those entitled little shining stars in my life, you know, let me know when it gets to the part about me. And it's not so much about entitlement. It's about good business. And realize it's the same mentality that a good business has for the customer, right? I got to get to the part about the customer. I've got to solve the problem. I've got to be able to market the solution and create something that is market approved. When a business understands that you have to do the same thing for the individuals that sell your product, to the employees, to the managers, to the leadership, and that it is your job as an entity to also get to the part about them, that's when things become successful. That's when things become significant. And ultimately, that allows you to then become more profitable. No significant loyalty will ever happen in business without significant connection. Connection always starts first. Get to the part about them.
Second thing I want to double click on is you talked about stewardship. So let's double click that on. And you said two things, stewardship and writing the story. Let's double click on that, those two for a bit.
Yeah, I think stewardship, when I say that word, really what I'm talking about is mentorship. When an employee hated their job, they always talked about a manager. They always would describe a manager. When an employee loved their job, they talked about a mentor. They described a manager or a leader in a role of mentorship, meaning that that leader had taken a role of stewardship and had become the individual that the employee chose. That's why mentorship is so important. Mentorship is not leadership. Leadership is not mentorship. Mentorship is not management. The unique part about mentorship is mentorship has to be earned. You cannot become the mentor in the story until the mentee invites you into their heart. That's what's so cool about it. Think about it, even for, you know, if you've ever had a mentor in your life, you chose them. You chose them. You sought them out because when you looked at them, you said, yeah, I like myself best because I'm with you. And because of who you are, I get to live better. and you did what it took to continue to nurture that relationship, to foster that, to create opportunities to connect more with that. And when mentors entered the story in the realms of management and leadership, that is the thing that yielded to the highest sense of retention and loyalty in a business. It was not management. It was mentorship.
So let's play a game here. I'm a business owner. You're coming in to consult, help me improve retention around employees so that people love it here. Mm-hmm. How do I get somebody to choose me? Yep. What do I need to do?
So a person would choose you because of, we call them the five C's of mentorship. If you don't have these in the equation, meaning that if your employee doesn't see this when they look at you, you're just a leader. You're just a manager. You're an individual with a title that is instructed to develop you, to push you in a way that creates an outcome. If you are a mentor, that individual sees these five C's: confidence, credibility, competence, candor, and the ability to care. Those five C's. So let's talk about them for a minute. So confidence is a mindset. I'm going to mentor with someone who's confident in themselves. They're confident in the process. They're confident in the way they communicate. Confidence exudes trust. We found people that were consistently choosing this individual time and time again, just because that individual had a sense of confidence in themselves. The second C was credibility. Credibility is your background. That's your history. That's your resume. Employees need to know about that. That shows that you have street cred, relevance, history, knowing that, oh my gosh, you grew up in the company and you started out on the bottom floor and now look at where you're at. There's some credibility there. You understand me. But also, credibility is not enough. Competence is another key factor, because what competence allows you to do as a mentor is to be a practitioner and not just a theorist. There's a difference. Many people are credible, but can they actually get out and do the things that they're telling others to do? Like, I'm a professional drummer. Okay. I played drums for 24 years of my life. And if I go to you as a drummer and I want to learn from you, kind of want to know, like, are you gigging on the weekends? Are you a working professional drummer, or are you just somebody that knows everything about percussion theory? Like, I can teach you the theory of how to play a trumpet, but can I actually play, in a jazz quartet? There's a difference, and competence is key. The fourth C was candor. Great mentors have the ability to have tough conversations. Candidness was key because it's not all sunshine and rainbows. Mentors have the ability to create deposits of trust with an individual to the point where they can make a few withdrawals. And any great mentor, that's just part of the journey, is when they become the advocate by having tough conversations and being somebody that they can look at you and say, you need to change. Things need to improve. But it's coming from a place of advocacy, not just development, because you care. And that's the last and fifth C, the ability to just give a darn. Like, do you really care for people? And do people understand and realize that you care for them? How can you show that? How can you prove that? So those five C's are first and foremost, that has to be in place. If they look at you and you're not very confident, you don't really have any credibility, I'm not going to even receive an honest conversation with you because I know you just want me to sell more product. You're not the mentor. You're just the manager. So those five C's, I think, would be a great starting point.
Yeah. Can we double down on the candor piece?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people avoid the candor. What's something we could say to somebody listening here who's saying, hey, I need to have that really candid conversation with somebody? How do I go about doing that?
I think first off, you've got to realize, it's like the bank account principle. Every day with your employees, you're making deposits of trust with them, or you're making the withdrawals. The problem is when you're trying to make too many withdrawals and you've made no deposits of trust. So the bank account is empty. And I think as a leader, it's our job to make sure, hey, am I advocating enough? Have I connected enough? Have I done my part? If I'm trying to do everything that I can within the realm of my perception to connect with this individual, cool. That's a great foundation to having a candid conversation. if in that conversation you go, I need to do more, I would start there first. I would start there first. And there are times when people need to be fired. There's horrible employees that are not a good fit and that aren't pulling their weight and they're not contributing. And this is just it's a horrible job where they're not playing to their passions and purpose, and it's full of toxicity and it's affecting the team. Okay. Those are tough conversations that need to happen, whether there is no connection or not, right? It's just not a good fit. But I think also there's an important part of inviting somebody into the conversation, asking them, hey, how open are you to allowing me to share a few things that are on my mind? Or if it's coming from advocacy, hey, I'm going to share a few things with you because I want you to grow and I want you to be better and I want you to be successful, versus I'm going to share a few things with you because if you don't do this, you're going to get fired. I need to share this with you because your numbers are low, right? Are we entity driven or are we individual driven? And the mentor is always individually driven. And that allows you to have really tough conversations in a way that is fulfilling and meaningful.
So prior to this conversation, I would have said that your mentor needs to be development driven, your personal development driven. But in your language, you seem to be using, like in your world, it seems like development is not a word that you would use. Is that a fair interpretation of what you're saying, or is that?
Yeah, I would say a manager is more focused on development. I would even a leader, like the traditional, let me categorize this for a second. The traditional definition of leadership would be someone who stands at the helm of the ship and you are the visionary. I'm going to lead the organization. I got to get us from point A to point B to point C. This is the way we're going to do it. And if people follow you, right, let's get everybody going towards this vision. That would be a traditional view of leadership. Management is about making sure there's no holes in the ship, making sure the ship can get there fast, effectively, efficiently. We're growing, we're developing, we're moving forward as an organization. Mentorship is about taking care of people on the ship. That is the difference. Where again, it is not about development of an individual to simply grow the business. It is advocating to grow the person, getting to the part about them where that individual then chooses you and then chooses your business.
I'm not going to jump in there. I get it. I think I love your boat metaphor. It's about a person. I think it's great. Before we jump off, I really want listeners to hear your story about how you became a drummer. Yeah. So especially that teacher who recognized, hey, you're not like disturbing the class. You're a drummer. Can you just share that story a bit for folks?
Yep. I was the kid that always struggled to sit still in school. I still have a hard time sitting still.
Are you struggling with this podcast right now?
Yeah, right now. I'm all over. But everybody saw the problem, right? Everybody saw that issue. They saw my inability to sit still. I would tap a lot and I got sent to the principal's office. I was nicknamed. The kids called me the twitcher. I got called the tapper because I just had a hard time focusing. Until one day there was a teacher named Mr. Jensen, and he was my fifth grade teacher, and he told me to stay after class. And I thought, you know, I'm getting kicked out of school as a 10-year-old. And he sat me down and he said, listen, he said, Clint, you tap, you do it a lot. You do it in my class and you do it in everybody else's. And he goes, you're kind of the kid that's on the list. Everybody teases you. Like you do it a lot. He said, but I watch you. And he said, you'll take a right, you'll start writing with your right hand and then you tap with your left hand at the same time. And he goes, all of a sudden, then you'll switch the pen and you start writing with your left hand and then you tap with your right hand. And he said, I think you're ambidextrous. And I had no idea what that meant. And he said, can you tap your head and rub your belly at the same time? You tap your head and then rub your belly and do it. And I could do it without thinking about it. I had this innate independence. And he said, can you switch it? And I could switch it. And he looked at me and he said, I don't think you're a problem. I just think you're a drummer. And in that moment, he opened up his top drawer and he reached inside and he took out my very first pair of drumsticks and changed my life. And I think this is why I'm so big on not only what the research has taught me about advocacy versus development, but what I've experienced in my own life of what happens when an individual gets to the part about a person first. Because after that moment, guess who listened a little more in school? Guess who the person was if Mr. Jensen asked me to do something, I was in. Guess who would work harder? Guess who listened better? Because he got to the part about me and he communicated to me my potential and my worth to a point that I saw it within myself. And in doing so, I bought in and I was connected. And for 24 years, man, I've been a professional drummer and I've toured and recorded all over the world. And my whole college education was paid for with music scholarships. It changed everything from a small moment when someone decided to see what was right instead of seeing what was wrong.
What's the difference you hope to make in the world?
My hope, honestly, is to allow people to live a life of significance, not just a life of success. My mantra is it's not about being the best in the world. It's about being the best for the world, right? How do we become the Mr. Jensen? How do you become an individual? How do you become an entity where people go, I like myself best because I'm with you. I live differently and better because I know you. And that to me ultimately is living significantly, not just successfully. And that's what fuels me.
Have you shared that with lots of people before? Like that living significance versus successful?
I try to. I mean, it's definitely kind of the mantra that I would say I'm known for.
Do you ever get pushback on that?
Actually, yeah, sometimes, because some people are like, nah, it's about the success. It's about the money. It's about fueling, you know. Yeah, you can love people, but if you're not making money, it doesn't matter if you love people.
How might you respond to that?
And I think it all comes back down to perspective. And ultimately, what I believe writes a better story. I know many people that, at the end of your life, like, I don't care what any of us do in this world. None of us are getting out of this life alive. And at the end of this journey, you're going to be surrounded. Every person is going to be surrounded by two things. You're going to be either surrounded by the do it, did it, done it's, or the woulda, shoulda, couldas. And I want my do it, did it, done it's to be in the realm of significance, because I think that's what people ultimately remember. Like, you look at success, for example. Like, tell me who the last three NFL MVPs were. Or who without Googling it, who are the last two Academy Award winners for best actor? Or who are the last two Miss Americas? Like, most people have no idea. Like, it doesn't really matter. But we would deem them successful, right?
Yeah.
Elegant, wealthy, beautiful, prestigious, all the things. Nobody really cares. But watch this. If I ask you, tell me the name of the teacher who made the biggest difference for you in your young life.
Yeah.
Or tell me the individual in your workplace that's allowed you to live a better story because you know them.
Yeah.
You instantly remember, right? Because it's a level of significance, not just success. And to me, that's just a more purposeful, driven way to live.
Yeah. My only argument to that is, like, for somebody like me, I love the 100 meter Olympic final. I could tell you who came first, second, and third for the last 10 Olympics.
Yeah.
I can't do that with anything else. But the story I like to tell. You know who Usain Bolt is?
Uh-huh.
So in the Beijing Olympics, that was when he won his first gold medal. Do you know who came second? Yeah, most people don't. There's a guy by the name of Richard Torpedo Thompson. Richard Torpedo Thompson ran his best time ever when he came second in that race. 4 years later, he ran again, and he came seventh. And he beat the time he beat 4 years ago, that he ran 4 years ago, and came seventh. And people still remember Usain Bolt. But what Usain Bolt is, he shifted that field so much. And people don't realize how crazy of that event was. But that's because I'm obsessed with that 100-meter race, so I could tell you all kind of stuff around it. But anyway.
And that's the thing, too, is like, you know, you're so passionate about that. And that is so great. And so the message is to still have passion and be interested and find the things that you innately love. I think great businesses that are significant, they really create a place where people have the ability to live into what I call the three P's: passion, their purpose, and their ability to provide in a way that is sufficient for them. Passion, purpose, and the ability to provide. And some of those things can be extremely successful, right? The world would deem that successful, right? You're the gold medal winner. That's a pretty successful thing.
Yeah.
But why not? I guess my thought is, why not bring in both? Because I think ultimately, here's the thing. If you're the most successful person in the world and you're a horrible human being, I don't really, yeah, I mean, you're gold medal, like, nah, you're kind of a horrible human.
Yeah.
And so why not bring in, you know, it's not just about being the best. I know Usain Bolt because of the goodness and the kindness that he shows to others.
Mm.
Like the clips of him and what he does for the people that are there and helping him out.
He gives kids
like
high fives and
right. Like that's what I don't even know how many gold medals he has, but I do know that it seems like he's a pretty decent human. So why not have both? Why not be the best for the world?
So let's double click on that. What's the best lesson you've ever learned? Be it on stages, be it on in your own research. What's one of the best lessons you've ever learned?
I think one of the quotes that changed my life is, and it's a constant pursuit for me, and it's a quote by Oscar Wilde. He was an Irish playwright, and he said, "To live is the rarest thing in the world. For most people merely exist, and that is all." And I do. I think a lot of people just exist in this world. And that quote changed my life because I was somebody who at one point in my career was just existing. I kind of chased the success. I chased the money. I chased, you know, stability. I chased some of the worldly things. And man, the day I quit my job and pursued really those three P's, my passions, my purpose, and my ability to provide for me and my family, that was the day I started living. And so I think, man, the ability to say like, I really lived a life that was, again, significance, I think is probably one of the best pieces of advice I've ever been given. And it's something that's definitely been a compass for me throughout my life.
Awesome. So, as we start to think through closing off this conversation, I do coaching as my primary day job. So I want to ask a coaching question that I've been asking people who've been on this podcast, and it's, where are you seeking comfort when you should be seeking discomfort?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think, man, standing in the tension, I'm a big fan of standing in the tension. Stand in the tension, be willing to do hard things, because that ultimately is how you grow. You've heard the story about Cortez, right? Burning the ships. Have you heard that?
Burn the ships, right? Yeah.
And for me, I've heard that story and I've thought, okay, what can I do to de-risk the level of failure? Meaning it allows me to stand in the tension more. It allows me to do hard things because I have a plan. I've brought the boat in as far as I can to the shore before I burn it. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
And so I think for me, that has allowed me to do hard things by simply having a plan. It's a weird theory. I don't share this with many people. I'm a big movie buff. I love specific movies for different reasons. I love how they can take people on a journey and evoke emotion and ultimately create positive change. I love that in film work and in story. One of the greatest films, in my opinion, of all time is the movie E.T. E.T., have you seen this movie, right? E.T., it's this little kid, and he's got this alien that he finds, and it was the highest grossing film of cinematic history for 11 years running, 11 years straight. It was eventually knocked off the charts by Jurassic Park, another Steven Spielberg film. But the score, the timelessness, the evergreen principles in that film, the acting, that just every, but the magic, the ultimate essence of that film is E.T. It's E.T. And you've got this creature that freaked me out as a kid. E.T. just, but it was so real. And there's a guy that nobody really knows about, and his name is Carlo Rambaldi. Carlos was the guy that created E.T. And he's a creature creator. And he went through over 300 different reiterations of creating this piece that is iconic. I don't care where you're from. You say the word E.T., like, people know what that is. They know, like, and still
depending
to this
point. Depending on how old you are, but yeah, I get it.
Yeah. But even younger kids, younger generations. But again, an evergreen, timeless principle.
What's that?
That you watch that movie today, it's still as relevant as it was back 100%.
Then. Yeah. I think it's even more relevant today because it's a story of an outsider. Mm-hmm. Like, and today we have this like whole polarized piece that's happening. And how do we befriend somebody who's so, so different from us, right? So it's even more relevant today.
Absolutely. And yeah. I think he became obsessive over the details. And right. What he did is he designed something that ultimately created success. And so for me, that has allowed me through the preparation to stand in discomfort.
Nice. So obsess over the details so you can stand in discomfort. Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right. So what would you like to leave the audience with? What's something you'd like, a message or something? How can they find you after if they want to learn more about your work? What would you like to share right now?
I, since you said that you were a coach, I am a big fan of coaching, but again, I think mentorship, right? And sometimes the realm of mentorship and coaching can become very similar. I think they are different at times, but there are many similarities. Every great mentor that I have ever met in my life was always being mentor, always. I grew up in Heber City, Utah, small little town, and it's a wrestling community. Like, it's just known for good wrestlers. The greatest wrestler of all time graduated from my high school. His name is Kel Sanderson. You being a somewhat of a sport buff, I can tell you'll appreciate this. Check this out. Kel Sanderson never lost a wrestling match once in high school, was never beaten. Then he went on to wrestle for Iowa State, the most competitive collegiate wrestling program in the world. Never lost, was never beaten. And then he went on to the Olympic Games where he took gold in Athens, Greece, and literally is deemed as the world's greatest wrestler. And my dad was my wrestling coach growing up. And every Friday night, my dad would say, come on, get in the truck. We're going to go watch Kel throw guys around on the mat like rag dolls. Let's go. And I remember one Friday night, I just told my dad, I said, Dad, listen, I don't want to go. Like, I know Kel's going to dominate. We go every Friday night. I just don't want to go. And I remember my dad looked at me and, you know, we talk about moments, right? Whether it's the Mr. Jensen story or it's the teacher that affected your life, like those little moments. And I'll never forget this moment when my dad, he looked at me and he said, you don't have to go. He said, but I have one question for you. And he said, do you want to be a great wrestler? You want to be great at what you do? And I said, well, yeah, of course. He said, then you got to hang out by the mat. First to hang out by the mat. And I've always remembered that story because, you know, it's like in basketball, right? If you want to be a great basketball player, you got to hang out by the hoop. You want to be great in business? You should do whatever it takes to associate with the astonishing people that are doing the things that you want to do, right? I grew up on a farm. You put a hard to catch horse in a field with an easy to catch horse, usually end up with two hard to catch horses. It's true. And so I guess my last message is who's your coach? Who are you mentoring from? Who are you learning from? Who are you actively choosing that time and time again makes your life a better story? And I think that's an important message to remember, to always be learning, always stay in rookie mode. And over time, we continue to be the best for the world because others were the best for us.
Awesome. Thank you for your time today, Clint. I know you're launching a masterclass soon. Can you share a little bit about that with folks before we jump off this call?
Yeah.
You've launched it already. Sorry.
Yeah, we launched it just this year. And it's a 52 video masterclass series that breaks down all of our research from the Undercover Millennial program. And it's all done in micro learning segments. And the goal is to give this to organizations that every week they go to their managers, they send this video out. It has a workbook with it. And it's just one idea. Here's one thought. Here's one thing you can do to become the mentor in the story. Here's one thing you can do to increase retention. Here's one thing you can do to create a level of significance in the workplace. And the reason for 52 is there's 52 weeks in a year.
Yeah.
And so for every week, for a year, your people are getting ideas, development. You're creating conversation in your organization that is specific to the people of your organization. And it has been one of the most fulfilling things I've ever had the opportunity to do. And so, yeah, they can visit clintpulver.com. Check out the masterclass and the quality of it. It's not just a talking head. It is leadership curriculum. This is not another online course. It's an experience, and I'm very, very proud of it.
Awesome. Folks, I'd like to thank everybody who comes to this podcast, Conversations with Keita Deming, and join me next time when I'm interviewing another person who helps people become better people in business and better business people. Clint, thank you for joining us this week.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for listening to Conversations with Keita Deming. Over the years, I've learned that few things will impact or improve your life more than improving your strategies and having better conversations with the people you wish to serve. If you like today's guest and the ideas shared, please like, follow, and provide a review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also visit my website to sign up for my newsletter and learn about the release of my upcoming book. I look forward to the next episode where we'll be in conversation with someone who will help you become a better business person and a better person in business. See you next time.